The Amalekites came and attacked the Israelites at Rephidim. Moses said to Joshua, "Choose some of our men and go out to fight the Amalekites. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with the staff of God in my hands." So Joshua fought the Amalekites as Moses had ordered. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went to the top of the hill. As long as Moses held up his hands, the Israelites were winning. But whenever he lowered his hands, the Amalekites were winning. When Moses' hands grew tired, they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. Aaron and Hur held his hands up, one on one side, one on the other, so that his hands remained steady till sunset. So Joshua overcame the Amalekites' army with the sword. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Write this on a scroll as something to be remembered, and make sure that Joshua hears it, because I will completely blot out the name of Amalek from under heaven." Moses built an altar and called it, "The Lord is my banner." He said, "Because hands were lifted up against the throne of the Lord will be at war against the Amalekites from generation to generation."
Great. Well, let's have a think about that reading now. Now, over the last few years, the whole idea of life hacks have become popular. If you're not familiar with the term, it's the idea of finding little things to change in your life to make things a bit easier. Let me give you a couple of examples that I found floating around on the internet. So this one, the idea of tying a particular bright piece of fabric on your suitcase to make it easier as it's coming around the carousel as you go away on holiday. Or maybe it's this one, storing your Christmas decorations in an egg tray so that they don't get squashed or crushed or rolled everywhere. Or this one, which I must confess I do actually use myself, is the idea of taking a bulldog clip and using it to stop your charging cables falling off the desk. You know, they're little things that are designed to make life just that bit easier, reducing the sort of annoying things of everyday life to win, to make life that bit easier. And actually, although they're kind of little things, they point towards a kind of bigger trend in our culture that wants us to succeed in life. I think it's indicative of being closer to America in kind of culture. You know, the idea of the American dream, wanting to be prosperous, to achieve success. Actually, we're seeing that in our culture too. And in some ways, it's no bad thing. We'd all love to see people being the best that they can be. The question that I think is the real question is, well, what are the means that we use to achieve success? How are we going to go about doing it? And I'm sure most of us have come across some of the ways that society thinks we achieve this. It might be these sort of book recommendations, things like Deep Work or the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Maybe you've had them recommended at work or heard friends talking about them. Maybe it's less work-focused. Maybe it's tidying up with Marie Kondo, you know, enjoying the joy of the tidy life. But are all these courses and books and seminars and all this sort of productivity and life improvement things, is that winning? Is that succeeding in life? It seems to be what society thinks it is. But I'm not so sure. The problem with most of these different things is that they make it about being better at work, cramming more into our days, being more focused on tasks and achieving things. Is that the secret to winning at life? I'm not so sure. And it's not the answer that the Bible gives either in our passage from Exodus 17. So let's have a look again at those words that Leon read for us and that Claire was talking about earlier. Now, we've seen over the last few weeks, haven't we, the people of God journeying under the Lord's leadership. They've come through the tests of not having had food and water and of having to trust God to supply them. And if we're honest, it's not being a storming success, but we're making progress, so it seems. They're learning that God will provide for them. But now the people of God are facing a very different kind of test, aren't they? It's not internal problems. It's not problems of their own making or in their own minds. Well, they're under attack. The Amalekites came and attacked the Israelites at Rephidim. They're still in that same area that they were last week, this area called Rephidim. And while they're there, the Amalekites, a people from the local area, come and attack them. The Israelites send out troops to fight them in response. Moses commissions Joshua. It's the first time we meet Joshua. We'll obviously hear more about him later as we go through the story of the Bible. He commissions him to go, take some men, and fight against the Amalekites. But they're not alone. Moses, well, he's going to go to the top of the hill and take the staff of God in his hand. Now, have you ever come across a picture where they've not got the focus right? It's supposed to be a lovely image, but the camera's not been set up. It's trying to focus in the foreground, that it's a long shot or vice versa. And it's turned a lovely picture into something quite blurry. And it can feel like that in our reading too. We've got a battle being described, but if you're following along in the Bible, well, it's not really interested in actually what's going on in the battle. If we were the sort of Hollywood director, we'd be very unimpressed with our film crew because they've had the camera pointing in the wrong direction. Joshua goes off to fight the Amalekites, as we see in verse 10, but rather than focusing on the battle itself, well, the camera's pointing the wrong way. It's kind of over that way. We hear very little of the battle itself. And that's because the hill, with Moses standing on it, is where we're meant to focus. That's where the action's really happening. That's the important thing that's going on. It's not actually to do with the battle going on the plain down below. So what's happening on top of the hill? Moses takes the staff of God in his hands and goes up to the top of that hill, and as he raises it aloft, as Claire was showing us earlier, and as he does so, the Israelites start to gain the upper hands. But when he lets his hands drop, the Israelites, well, they start losing. The Amalekites come into the ascendancy. There's a pressing need to keep Moses' hands raised. But like anyone who's had to hold something up in the air for an extended period of time, after a while, his hands get tired. So Aaron and Hur take a stone, make him sit on it, and hold his arms aloft until nightfall, until they've won the battle. The Israelites fend off the Amalekites and win. But what are we to make of these few verses? Well, I think it's this. Moses has the staff of God in his hand. This staff is the symbol of God's mighty power being at work in the world, coming through Moses, his divinely appointed representative on earth. As Moses raises his staff to the heavens, he is calling on God's power for the Israelite army, to help them to win the battle. Moses, this man at this time, is directing the power of God for the strengthening of God's people. Now, if you've come across this passage before, you might have heard this talking about people using it as an example of the power of prayer. But I don't think that's quite what's going on here. I don't think it's so much about prayer as being about power. It's not how the book of Exodus talks about prayer, both in the way Moses prays and in the way that Aaron and Hur support Moses. I think a better way of understanding it is this idea of Moses being the channel through which God's power flows out to God's people. Maybe we could think of it like a machine and an electricity supply, with Moses being the connection between the two. The machine may well be very willing to perform the task at hand and very able to do so, but it's only through the connection to the electricity supply that it's able to do anything. In the same way, the people of God are fighting the battle that God has called them to fight, but it's only through God's power coming through Moses to God's people that they're able to do anything. Now, one of the accusations labelled against the Eurovision Song Contest is that it's less about the relative musical talents of the different artists and more about political relationships between the various countries. And if that's true, well, unfortunately, I think we as the United Kingdom should be very worried because, we've been sliding down to the bottom of the pile. Since 2015, we've been 26th out of 26 twice. Only once have we been higher than 24th, when we reached the dizzying heights of 15th out of 26. Now, if the Eurovision Song Contest is an indicator of our nation's popularity, then we must conclude that Europe stands against us. And maybe we can think of reasons why that would be the case. Now, that's a silly way of talking about how popular a country is or one group of people would be. It's maybe probably the sort of level we can cope with, really. But as we come to the end of our reading, we hear something much more serious. Look at verse 14, it's on the screen here. Then the Lord said to Moses, write this on a scroll as something to be remembered, and make sure that Joshua hears it, because I will completely blot out the name of Amalek from under heaven. Because of the actions of the Amalekites, because they came and attacked the Lord's people, God says that he will completely blot their name out from under heaven. They will be completely and utterly destroyed. They're going to be wiped from the face of the earth. It's going to be so significant that unless it's written down, these people are not going to be remembered. We should feel the shock of this. This is shocking, isn't it? It's not a little bit of, you know, argy-bargy between two countries. It's not a political spat. This is obliteration. A ridiculous amount of overkill. Surely this doesn't deserve this level of response. I think this passage leads us to two conclusions. Look at verse 16 with me. Because hands were lifted against the throne of the Lord will be at war against the Amalekites from generation to generation. You see, in attacking the Israelites, the Amalekites are not just attacking God's people, but God himself. They are declaring themselves opposed to God, the rightful ruler of the world. And not only that, God has got a particular task in mind for the Israelites. All those years ago in Genesis 12, God promised to Abraham that he would use his descendants, the Israelites, to bless the whole world, to see God's purpose and plan and good promises spread out over the whole of the world. And so as the Amalekites come and attack the Israelites, it's not just that they're saying, we reject you, God. It's just saying, actually, we're trying to stop your plan. We are actively opposed to the good things that you, God, are trying to do. And so the consequence of that is that God says, well, we cannot have this, because otherwise the goodness that I'm trying to bring into the world will be stopped. And so the Lord is permanently opposed to the Amalekites. He will be against them from generation to generation, as we see in the words on the screen. Now, I'm conscious that more could be said on this topic on this idea of God and violence in the Old Testament that we're going to leave there for the moment. However, if you want to think about this some more, and I know this is a a serious question that we want to think about properly. There are lots of good resources on our church website, particularly a sermon that Frank gave recently on Deuteronomy 7 called Does the Bible Endorse Genocide? There's the sermon and also a short handout attached to it as well. As I say, on the church website in the resources section. Because God is opposed to the Amalekites, God equips his people through Moses to defeat them. And that's because he's bringing something wonderful into the world. He is going to redeem it and rescue it. And nothing is going to stand in his way. We started our sermon today thinking about winning at life. Because there's so much more to success than life hacks, positive thinking, good habits. The way that the Israelites succeed point us towards the real secrets. In fact, I think there are two ways that this secret works itself out. Well, firstly, the Israelites succeed because the power of God is at work in their lives. And that's great news for us too, as Christians today. Because that same ability to win is true for us too. Because of Jesus, as Claire was reminding us earlier, we know that he is for us. And we know that Jesus sent the Holy Spirit on the church so that we can be equipped to face and win in every situation. Paul tells us in Ephesians 6 to put on the whole armor of God so that we are fully equipped to face any and every situation that would lead us away from God. As Paul says in Ephesians 6, put on the full armor of God so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground. And after you have done everything, to stand. Now this isn't a promise that we're going to be healthy and wealthy for all our days, but that we will live out the life that God intends, being blessed by him, equipped by him to live for all situations. So as we deal with grumpy children, we can respond with grace. As we face unhappy customers, angry bosses at work, we can respond with the love of God. As we're tempted to despair and give up, we can be sure that God is for us and that he will give us the strength we need to carry on until tomorrow, where his strength will be there for us again. God will equip us and give us the strength to succeed. But not only in those moments, this passage also helps us to shape our priorities right as well. The Israelites were focused in the midst of battle on keeping Moses' arms raised up to the sky. Now, I've never been in a battle, but I'm fairly sure that that's not normal battle tactics. And the same is true for us as Christians. As Christians, we want to see Christ glorified in our lives and the lives of those around us. And that's a different way to the way that the world sees things, isn't it? It's focusing on different things, different priorities. And as we do so, it means that we don't need to succeed as the way that the world around us says we need to. We don't need the Instagram-worthy lives, jobs, houses, children, insert whatever here. We can enjoy life the way that God intends, seeing God's good priorities for the world. And that's through focusing on seeing Jesus lifted high in our lives. And so I think that's the secret. The secret to winning at life is focusing on our Savior and living in the power that he brings.